Welcome back. Episode 60 of the award-nominated Prestige Performance. This morning, I am delighted and excited to be joined by former Manchester United coach Rene Mullenstein. In this episode, we're going to be chatting about Rene's new book, United, Sir Alex and Me, and chatting a bit about his time at the club as well. Rene, you are extremely welcome to my podcast.
Well, thanks for having me on, Jimmy. First, one second, because then if you're talking about the book, you might as well put it here.
Absolutely. Put it in view.
Oh, wait. This side.
Yeah.
Now we have it. It looks good.
Thanks for having me on the podcast, Jimmy. Great.
An absolute pleasure. I'm a lifelong fan, so I'm really looking forward to our conversation. I suppose congratulations are in order, first of all. Congratulations on the publication of your book. I am about halfway through it. Absolutely fantastic. Really enjoying it so far. How happy are you with the outcome of the book? I know this was a process that's been ongoing now for you for around 2 years.
Yeah, it has. It has been, Jimmy. And I'm glad that you say, I'm a lifelong Man United fan, because predominantly I've written a book for people like yourself, because you follow Manchester United, obviously, with a big interest in all the games and everything. And that wasn't any different when I was there 10 years ago. But sometimes when you go through those periods of, sustained success, what we've had, and people start to take things for granted and never ask the question, why was it? And I got that question through the years, and, I had conversation about it, and a lot of people said to me, listen, Rene, you need to write a book, because I think a lot of fans would be interesting to learn from what are the sort of key factors and parameters of success around that period, and how did you shape it all up, and if that is sort of combined with all the stories around the games and how it flowed through those 6 years. Yes, I'm quite happy, because I hope that everybody that reads the book that will say, it was really interesting, informative, and in some ways educational. So that's the aim of the book.
You mentioned the idea of sustained success there. I will come back to that, because, as you know, my area is performance psychology, and I'm fascinated by all the tiny ingredients that contribute to the high performance we see on match day. And I would agree. I do think it's educational for up-and-coming coaches in particular. It's quite the story, though, from your hometown village of Bugen in rural Holland to success in Qatar to Manchester United, working alongside Ferguson, to your role now with the Australian national team, of course, in between leaving United, and now there were periods in Fulham, there was a stint in Philadelphia. Was reflecting back on your career a process which you enjoyed?
Enjoy, I don't know whether enjoy is the right word, but, in life, Jimmy, you just, have to do what's in front of you. I enjoyed my time at Manchester United tremendously. It's been the most memorable and enjoyable time of my coaching career, although I have to say I really enjoyed my time at the Australian FA with the Socceroos at this moment in time, and really enjoyed the last 5 years, because I see a lot of similarities what we had at United at the time under Sir Alex Ferguson. A real motivated staff, a real good staff, that know their roles and know their responsibilities, and a great group to work with. Obviously, at my time at United, that squad was just exceptional in terms of talent, potential and experience, what we've had. But then when it's time to move on to different things, you get faced with different challenges, and not everything works out the way that you expected that it worked out. But like you said, you reflect on it, you learn from it, and you move on. But, although I have to say in the spells that I had at club level with Brøndby, Fulham, Anzhi is different, because that was a completely different reason why that didn't work out. But, Maccabi Haifa and all those clubs, people say, do you feel that you're more of a coach and a manager of? No, I think, I've had spells as a manager in Qatar before I came to Manchester United, and that was really successful, in the 2 years that I worked there. But you need to be given the time to make it a success. And that is the problem I've had with those other clubs, that people are, so erratic at times and emotional in their decisions that it sometimes doesn't work out. I've never lost a day's or night's sleeps over it because I always felt that I was trying to do the right thing in the right way. You always learn when you reflect, but it all adds up to the experience, and that is what I've tried to put in the book as well.
Of course, you were involved with United during one of the most successful periods in the club's history, consistently reaching a very high level of performance. I remember watching that team in Europe in particular, the knockout stages in particular, Lyon, Roma, Barcelona. I think in reaching the final, there was 9 wins and 3 draws. What are the key ingredients, Rene, in consistently achieving such high levels of performance?
I think there's a number of things. First of all, I think you need to always maximize the time that you have available to prepare the players on and off the pitch. So Alex always used to say to me, Rene, always remember what you do on the training pitch will manifest itself in a game, good and bad. And besides that, I had a clear guidance from Sir Alex what he expected Man United to look like when they were playing at the best. And I, you know, used to instill that within those sessions. Now, within those sessions, I always made sure that the players understood the purpose of the session. I always made sure I challenged the players, and that can come in many different ways. But all the sessions revolved around two things, quality and intensity. That needs to be game related. And those were the most important ingredients for the players to understand. And off the pitch, it's all about important that you give them the right information, enough information, not too much, but enough to make sure that they are ready for that next performance and get a win. Now, within that preparation, we always had a sort of an 80-20, 75-25 rule, which what I mean by that is that 20% or 25%, depending on the game, depending on the opponent, we would spend on highlighting, you know, where the dangers were of the opponent, what the key players were, what the trends were, the style, how would they score goals, how would they concede goals. But 80% to 75% was all about us. How are we going to win the game? That instilled a lot of, you know, self-belief within the players and confidence that basically we, you know, we expected to win every game. We are Man United. And that is what we wanted in terms of the approach to do all the games. So that's a combination of things. And then the last thing is the mind, the sort of the mental mindset to it. You know, so Alex Ferguson, apart from when he was a really good man manager, and a coach, he was an outstanding psychologist. You know, he would very, very well how to motivate players individually, you know, to sort of put an arm, you know, put an arm around the shoulders, or sometimes to really, you know, tell them what was expected. So I'm a strong believer, Jimmy, you were in psychology as well, and I'm a strong believer in, you know, where the mind goes, the rest will follow. And you have to sort of shape that in that direction. But the bottom line was, what I said before, was the unbelievable talent and potential that we had in group and the experience that went along with it, with players like Nario, Patrice Evra, Gary Neville, obviously in the beginning of it, Scholes, Giggsy, and then all the potential we had in the talent with Rooney and Ronaldo and Park and Nani and Valencia, and you can mention them all. So that combination of all those things. But one of the underlying things is, like I said when the start of this, it is important that you do the right things in training because it will manifest itself in the game.
I agree. And for me, whether it's mental skills training or skill acquisition, and I always joke with the individuals that I work with that by the end of our work, you'll be absolutely sick of me using the word repetition. And from reading your book, it seemed that repetition is also a key part of your approach. Repetition is key.
Well, it's all about repetition in training, Jimmy, because repetition made permanent and repetition makes perfect. So the key is to then to train the same things, but wrap it up in a different way to keep it still, you know, exciting for the players. See, when the manager spoke to me, when he said, Rennie, I'm going to promote you to first team coach because you know, Carlos left, I think, for the Portuguese national team, and Mick Phelan was promoted to assistant manager. And we were basically already running, you know, the whole pre-season. So there wasn't an issue for him because he saw that was really well, really run well between myself, Mick, and Tony Sturridge and Eric Steele. So there's no issue there. But he sort of explained on three flip charts to me that he said, listen, Randy, I don't have to tell you how to run the sessions. You know, that's going really well. I'd just like you and me to make sure that we're on the same page with regards to what does the best Man United team look like. So explain what it meant in terms of defensive strategies, in terms of pressing high or dropping into a block or countering from a D block based on quick transition, the set pieces that you have to deal with, possession, how important would that was in terms of the momentum, taking the initiative, taking control of the game, and eventually maybe try to dominate the game. And rhythm. Rhythm was the most important thing. I always remember that, you know, it says the best team of players that create rhythm, maintain rhythm, must change rhythm. And within possession, I want all the players to have this in their head. Think forward, look forward, play forward. You never liked it when players played the ball back when there was a pass on forward. And it's all about breaking lines. Another golden rule was, you know, when players in the build-up have time in the ball, forward runs. We need runners, forward runs, and we need players coming in the pocket. So it was a two-way movement. So the player on the ball had options: play through the lines in the pockets, or playing behind the defenders. But this was the most important one, the last sheet. I never forgot that. He says, when I see United attack, I see them attack with pace, power, penetration, and unpredictability. And I said, I want you to instill those four elements in this team, in every training session, whatever you do, whether it's a finishing session, a possession game, and a conditioning game, whatever it is. And if you look back, Jimmy, to that Man United at that particular time, and, you know, the great games we had in the Champions League, you know, and the pace and power we attacked with, you know, at times, the unpredictability that those forward players give us, you know, was fantastic. The penetration that was there for everyone to see. So it was great testament to, again, back to what I said, what you do in training will manifest itself in a game. And the players bought into that. And then if you get then the performances that we saw and the results go with it, it's brilliant to experience.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of that team, Rooney, Ronaldo, Tevez, the words we used, pace, power, I'm even excited thinking about it now. And from reading your book and from talking to you for these initial few minutes, one thing that strikes me, Rene, is that you still love to reminisce about your time at the club.
100%. It's just like I said before, Jimmy, it was the most memorable, the most enjoyable time in my coaching career. And if you think about it, because a club of the size of Manchester United, Jimmy, they have the highest of ambitions. They always want to challenge for all the trophies on show. And that wasn't any different under Sir Alex Ferguson. That was very, very clear. But with ambitions, you have to meet, there comes expectations. And to meet those expectations, you need to have high standards. And to meet those high standards, you need to take responsibilities, players and staff. That's why, you know, it's an ongoing thing. But as long as you know that, and with all those things, normally comes pressure to try to meet those standards and expectations and fulfill those ambitions. However, I never felt any negative pressure around my time with Sir Alex Ferguson. And that was purely testament to his man management skills. He all put us at ease. And that was because we never got carried away with the highs. You know, winning was expected. And it was great. And we enjoyed it. But we never got carried away with it. We never got carried away with the lows. Yeah, we had some losses along the way. But we always reflect on it. And we never got carried away in such a way that it brought us down, because there was a game around the corner. We always made sure that we kept a very stable approach to, yes, we go to the game and we won more than we drew or lost, you know, and we carry on next game. And he was a master in making sure that everybody in the squad felt important, because not everybody plays as many games, but everybody felt that they contributed. And that was important to him as well, to making sure that he respected every member of the squad and making sure that he had some kind of contribution to the achievements over the season.
Let's stick with Sir Alex Ferguson for a minute. Of course, in the book, you mention that initial meeting with Ferguson. Were you nervous?
Very strangely enough, no, I wasn't. Really crazy, because obviously I knew Manchester United only from TV, watching them, you know, on TV in the Premier League and watching Sir Alex on TV. And because of, over the years, I always flew to England to do my badges, because I felt in Holland I was sort of, you know, stopped in my tracks to basically eventually do the pro license. So I thought, I need another route, a route here to fulfill that. So I went to England, and in one of those trips, I got to meet Dave Richardson. He was working for the Premier League at the time. And we had discussions about it, and he felt that the stuff that I was doing, the technical approach at grassroots level, was so important that it needed to be integrated in English football. So he's tried to open some doors for me, but never really anything happened until that Les Kershaw, the academy manager at the time, spoke to Dave and said, listen, Dave, we're looking for a technical skills coach. We can't find anybody in England. Can you recommend someone? So Dave recommended me. And at the time I was working in Qatar. And one of the people that I got to know there was Dave McKay, who had the national under 17 team. Dave was obviously the legendary Scottish international and Spurs player. And he was my next door neighbor. And I didn't know that, but I found out actually when I was working for Manchester United that, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson was a big fan of Dave. But one day there was a conference in England, and I spoke to Dave Richardson. I'm coming over for the conference. If you want me to do some sessions for clubs that are interested, I can stay a bit longer and I can do that. But like I said before, Les Kershaw got in touch and he wanted to meet me, which we did. At the time, I was actually staying at Dave's house in Burton, close to Nottingham. And I spoke to him about the fact that I've met Les Kershaw, the academy manager of Manchester United. I said, I don't want you to do anything with it, but just so you are aware, if you hear anything, then you know what's happening. But Dave did ring Sir Alex Ferguson, and he said, listen, I know you're looking for this technical coach, Rennie Brunstein. I know him. I've worked with him in Qatar, and I can strongly recommend him. So that put a lot of weight on the plate of Sir Alex and made it much easier. And then obviously eventually Sir Alex Ferguson rang me myself whilst I was still in Qatar. I was managing Al Sadd at the time. And we had a 20-minute conversation, which was really unreal, really. You know, when the phone rings and, hello, Rennie, Sir Alex here. And you think, okay. So we agreed that when I had a break in the season, I was coming over to Manchester United to meet him and to talk to him and to other people in the club and the academy, and which I did in January 2001. And I spent about 5 days, and I met basically everybody that was important in the academy, which was really great. I did 4 or 5 training sessions so they could see what that skills development coaching would look like. And, you know, on the last day when I left the club, it was clear and evident that they wanted to bring me into the club in the summer. So that was great for me. But all through those 5 days, really strangely enough, Jimmy, I was never nervous in any shape or form, not by walking in and, you know, and probably it had something to do with Kath, who was at the reception, who was probably 160 years old by now. But she was just so lovely and welcoming. And everybody does that because that's the first person you meet. But it was just great. It was a great experience. And I was sort of so convinced of the stuff that I had to offer. And I think it went really well. And the fact that they brought me in 2001 was obviously testament to it.
Yeah, well, I suppose this was your moment. Everything you had worked for, everything you had prepared for. I know in your book, you said that you were convinced that one day you would be at a big team. So this was your moment, I suppose.
It absolutely, but I never in my wildest dreams I could ever expect it to, you know, to work for the club of the size of Manchester United. Funny enough, Jimmy, as well, I have to say this. I went to England many, many years, you know, like I said, to do my badges. And I went in 93. That was the prelim. So that was really the start of the courses. But I've already done quite a few courses in Holland. So for me, that was really easy. But it was still 3 weeks of hard work. And there were about 20 different nationalities on that course, coming from everywhere in the world. But it was a really enjoyable course. especially because of so many different people from so many different countries. But in the second week, there was this van that turned up that basically had every shirt in England on sale. You know, any club in the Premier League or League One, League Two, Championship. And I picked the Man United shirt, you know, with Sharp on the front and with the laces up here. And you ask yourself, why didn't they buy a Liverpool shirt or an Arsenal shirt? Why the Man United shirt? And deep down, there was always this affection for the club, because when I grew up, we couldn't watch as much foreign football as we do today. Today, you don't miss anything. But at the time, we didn't see any Premier League games. We just saw the England FA Cup final on the first Saturday of May. That was the only thing we would see. But I do remember that I've watched a few Man United finals, you know, on that Saturday. And Arne Meuren, one of our Dutch players, was playing for Man United. So that was probably the reason why. But yeah, it must have happened for a reason. And you know what I mean? And that shirt became obviously very special.
You're smiling here, even thinking about it.
Yeah, I do. You know, life sometimes, you know, develops in different ways.
Of course, you are credited as one of the key figures in the rise of Cristiano Ronaldo. And I really loved the part at the beginning of the book where you asked him to break down the specific route he drives home, essentially using it as a metaphor, building, I suppose, the self-awareness in Cristiano that there are particular things he will have to do in order to become the best player in the world. And you compared it to the route that Cristiano has to take in order to become the best player in the world. And I suppose the key point I took from that was the importance of having goals that are really specific. What was your initial impression of Cristiano?
Well, let me first start by saying, you know, what you started by saying, I'm credited. I think there's a lot of people that contributed, you know, at Manchester United at the time, not only me. And I think everybody with that has had a part to play. So did I. And I just identified that. I thought if Cristiano can become more productive, more effective in using his skills and more functional for the team, it will benefit everybody. But when he came there straight away, you could see that he was a talent, backs up potential. But more than anything, he was very, very focused. He knew very, very, very from an early age on what he wanted to achieve. And that is the things that I sort of bluntly discussed with him. I says, I know exactly what you want. And you said it. You want to become the best player in the world. And that's great because you've got an aim. And that was the whole conversation about the car, about going home. If you know where you're going, you got a purpose, and then you put direction to it. So if you do that in life, in terms of achieving your ultimate goals, your ultimate ambitions, then you have to set different targets to get there. And then you find the right strategies to put that in place. And one of those strategies was to make him more productive in front of goal, to make him more effective with his skills and functional for the team. And that was basically the whole approach that I had over the time that he was suspended over for the first 3 or 4 games of that season. And that was great because you had a lot of, you know, personal contact time with him. And I have to say, he was, like I said, Cristiano would absorb everything that he would know would help him to achieve that goal. Not only what we discussed and what I did on and off the pitch, but also the time he spent with Mike Clack in the weight room before Tony Stroddy came in, the same thing, you know, the conversations he must have had with Sir Alex Ferguson, with Carlos Queiroz and Mick Phelan, all those things added up. And eventually it has to come and show in the performances and the results. And for me, the big thing was when I asked the question about him and scoring goals, because he scored 23 goals in the previous season, how many do you think you're going to score this season? Because I assume you want to be better. And he said 30. And that's where I said, well, I was like, and he said, what do you think? I think you should go for 40. She was really, hold on a minute, that's nearly double. He said, that's correct, but we haven't started working on your game yet, you know, so I do think it's achievable, but you stick with your 30, and if you get there, you try to get to the 40. And it was fantastic to see that. I think end of February, he's already had his 30 goals. And then he carried on to achieve mine. I think he finished that season with 42 goals, I think, in all competitions. So that was very, very, very well done.
42, yeah. Yeah, he wasn't bad in the end, was he? He turned out okay, I suppose.
No, he was great. And I mean, listen, look at him now still. He's gone to Saudi, but for him to keep playing, keep carrying on, I mean, you know, you almost have to mention Messi in the same breath, because both of them have been, you know, I mean, we've been so blessed to have watched for the last 15 years absolutely two one of the greatest world-class players. Every both of them in their own right, both different in style, but so productive and functional in terms of what they've meant for all the teams to play for. It's just remarkable, and it's just great to see, and that you've played a bit of a small part of it in the beginning of it. It's just very rewarding.
There's a concept, Rene, that I'm absolutely fascinated by. It's this idea of psychological safety, whereby players or individuals in their work are basically encouraged to be creative. They're encouraged to take risk without any negative consequence if things go wrong. Now, I don't know if you saw it, but recently there was a video on social media of Pep Guardiola from the Man City documentary, and he was saying to his players, you have permission to lose, you have permission to give the ball away. And to me, it was an obvious example of putting in practice this idea of psychological safety. And when I think of United at that time, like we said, they were unpredictable. They took risks. And in your book, you write, the players knew that they were free to use their skill set without any reprimand if things went wrong. How, as leaders, be it yourself, Ferguson, Phelan, how is that culture facilitated? What kind of message are you imparting?
If you ask for unpredictability, Jimmy, that can only come from creativity and imagination. And those two things can only happen if there's freedom of expression. So what we were very clear on was with the team and the squad was, if we set out a very distinctive plan of how we wanted to defend, then everybody had to do their jobs. So if we wanted to press from the front, if we wanted to, to do any sort of defensive aspects of the game, then that was it. But in terms of possession, there were also certain guidelines, certain ways that we said, like I said, that were general things, you know, think forward, look forward, play forward, breaking lines, forward runs when there's no pressure on the ball. But when we got into that attacking side, then it was all about that the players understood the options that we showed them in terms of, look, this is where they're vulnerable, this is where we can hurt them, and these are the things that, you know, that you can hurt them with. So, but therefore, then it is your own interpretation to make that happen. That's where the freedom comes in. That's where the expression comes in, the imagination and the creativity. So the players were total free, because if you don't do that and it becomes too rigid, players start to think and overthink all the time if they're making the right decision for the coach. But that will delay the decision-making process in the game. So it slows everything down. And in those moments, because one of those things like creativity and imagination and unpredictability, you can't defend them. You can't not defend them. You know what I mean? And that's why it's such an important part of the game. And that's why we were so big on making sure that freedom, the players understood that freedom and they could take risks. And yes, we know not everything comes off. But the more you put them in that situation in training, more things will come off, than not. So that was always the mantra, plus the fact that the manager was very big on, yes, winning comes first, but we also have an obligation to entertain the fans.
One moment which really stuck out for me in the book, Rene, was when you got the United job and you brought your dad for the tour of Old Trafford. You brought him to Carrington. What a lovely moment.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I still remember the unfortunate thing was, because he brought this little flick through camera and he's wanted to take some pictures at Old Trafford, because just putting him on the middle of the pitch just to see it off the huge size of the stadium and what an effect it has when you stand there, and you know, to experience what an effect it has on players if there's 76,500 people. The only unfortunate thing was that you didn't have like a film in it, so that was unfortunate. But it was great for him to eventually come to see where I was working, because the funny story was when I came back from United initially for the meeting just to meet Sir Alex and all the other staff members, I flew back through Holland just to tell my parents, listen, there's going to be a change in my career. I'm going to leave in Qatar. I'm going to work in England. And it's a club in the Premier League. And well, my dad, who is it? They said, well, have a guess. And the first thing he said, it won't be Manchester United. So well, who do you think it is then? And I just sort of played around with him. So I let him mention every club that he could come up with. But I said, no, there's a club, the first club you mentioned, so, Manchester United. So he was, you know, unbelievably, you know, impressed and proud. But when I brought him and he eventually met Sir Alex Ferguson, that was a really fantastic moment, you know, because he obviously only knew Sir Alex from TV. And it was great to see for them to what my workplace was. And like I said, one of the qualities of Sir Alex in that respect was because at the time that we were working there, we had numerous visitors that came along, and you know, it was always approved if you could watch training and all that. But everybody, every single one that was there when they walked away, they always would say, What a fantastic, lovely, familiar atmosphere. And so Alex Ferguson would always spare a few minutes to talk to the people and make them feel welcome and everything. So no, it was a really great time, and for my dad to experience some of that was fantastic.
What a buzz that must have been for your dad to see his son on TV in the dugout at Old Trafford beside Sir Alex Ferguson.
Yeah, he used to, but obviously when I was there initially, I was still with the academy, so I wasn't with the first team. But later on, when I progressed with the club and ended up sitting next to Sir Alex in the dugout, he used to go with his brother to my brother because to watch the games, because he was the only one where it was on TV. So they would sit there in the afternoons watching it, and it was obviously a special moment when they saw a glimpse of me on TV.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I'd love to ask you about the windows of development, Rene, the four attributes that you look to develop in a young player. So there's the mental side of it, the tactical side of it, the physical side of it, and the technical side of it. At what age are you starting to incorporate the mental side of it? What does that look like? How do you do it?
It starts right from the start. Because the mental development goes in different stages as well. It's important to understand that when the kids are young and an early age, you know, their mental side starts developing straight away from the moment they're born, and the way that the parents are conducting themselves in and around a young child and the information and the signals that they get. And, you know, obviously, there is this project now that has come out, which is called Football Starts at Home. It's a good friend of mine that are sort of focused on that and the advantages of parents getting involved with young kids as the ages 3, 4, and 5 to start little ball manipulation stuff and all that, which enhances a lot of other things than just being playing with a ball, but motorial skills, but also the mental sort of aspects of enjoyment, learning, pleasure, focus. That means if they do that, they've got a higher entry level when they eventually come into a club environment. But for us, for me, it was always important that the kids, you know, was all about enjoying, learn through playing, you know, learning new things, expressing themselves, you know, through improving through success and failure. Like I said, there's no problem there. But that mental sort of thing goes, because when the kids experience success on the ball, the confidence grows. And when kids' confidence grows, the personalities improve, they grow as well. And then they are more likely to express themselves, take initiative. And all those, you know, byproducts are so important in normal life as well. But people reflect to or refer to a lot when they talk about the mental side of the game. They talk about the winning mentality and the competitiveness and all that. But with young kids, you don't really have to do too much than just create the right environment. Because if you've got two young kids 10 years of age, 11 or 12, and you give them a ball, they will compete automatically. And that's natural, which is good. But the problems start when the coaches get involved and want young players, you know, and structure these young players to try to win a game for his benefit, not for the benefit of the development of the players. And that is the key thing important, because that gradually competitiveness will grow as the kids get older. And when they start to hit the ages of 16, when they would have a fairly decent understanding of what their roles and responsibilities are in 11v11, yes, you want them to compete. You want them to compete to win. There's nothing wrong with that. But you still want them to make sure that they try to play in the right way. You know, that's the most important thing for the coach. But winning and losing or drawing, all those experiences add up to the mental development of the players and creates that confidence, that belief, or creates that resilience that you need to have as well. But the emphasis shifts from really, you know, being, you know, a young child that just want to enjoy themselves, to an older player that moves into the adult world where it is very competitive, where it is about results, where it is about winning, but still understands, you know, the importance of enjoying themselves and enjoying playing football. Because if you don't enjoy it, then you will never be able to get the best out of yourself.
Lovely. I'm just conscious of time. So real quickly, I want to jump to 2013. Ferguson retires, David Moyes arrives. In my opinion, Rene, the first mistake David Moyes made was destabilizing that supportive foundation that Ferguson had in place, which contributed to the success, i.e. yourself and Mick Phelan. How do you reflect on it, Rene, a decade later?
I think it was a missed opportunity, to be fairly honest, for David, but obviously for ourselves, because it meant that we had to leave the club that we loved and served for such a long time. If you look back to, I was there for over 12 years. You look there how long Mick Phelan was there. Eric Steele was there for I don't know how many years, and many others, you know, even longer than myself. So every club and every organization, Jimmy, in my opinion, revolves around two important things: stability and continuity. And continuity has to do with the vision that you want to put in place to be successful over the short, medium, and long term. And so Alex built that vision and developed that vision over the years, you know, from 86 onwards. But it was well in place, you know, because obviously so Alex Ferguson was the guarantor for that stability and continuity. And the stability is brought by the people that are there for a long time, that put those those strategies in place with the expertise and the experience that they bring to the club. So when new people come in and they have a new vision, then, you know, that means that the other people that are still there have to sort of buy into that and maybe adapt to that, if that's a different vision as, you know, the established one. But if, and the vision changes, and the support staff changes, then you get a little bit of a, you know, an inconsistency. And that is, I think, what sums up the last 10 years of United, because that inconsistency has shown through in the strategies, how the club has been run over the last 10 years in terms of managers coming and going, you know, players coming and going, the ongoing instability in terms of the ownership that is still ongoing, that has not been clarified. So, yeah, initially, like I said, a missed opportunity, because I and McFeeling and myself, I'm sure we all had conversations with David Moyes. We had only one thing to heart, you know, making sure that Man United, you know, remain successful, and that also David Moyes would be successful in that capacity as a manager of Manchester United. But yeah, it's unfortunately worked out not the way that we all expected.
Final question. I really appreciate your time. Where do you think United are now as a club under Ten Hag? How close do you think they are to getting back to the top of the tree, I suppose, which has to be the aim?
Well, that is obviously the ultimate aim, because that's where Man United belongs. I mean, yeah. It's been really remarkable if you look back that in 10 years and a decade time that you had really challenged for the Premier League, became, you know, second once or twice, but obviously with a street length away from you know, the national champions. But that's where they need to go back to. I think Erik ten Hag is the right man for the job. I think he's got a clear vision, a vision and a style of play that suits Manchester United, because obviously he had exactly the same when he was the manager of Ajax. And that requires, first and foremost, that he can bring the players in that he feels that can do the job for him. You know, where are they now? Still hard to predict. I think listening to Erik and reading between the lines, I think he is very wise in managing the expectation, because he's still, I think he's still himself looking and searching for, you know, a few things before things are fully clicking into place. I think the game against Wolves last Monday was testament to that. But they came away with a win, which is important, you know, to get those first 3 points on the board, and you keep pace, because that's what you need to do in the first 10 games. Keep pace with the front runners, or become a front runner themselves, and see how it goes. And, you know, every club, every league is different. And I think when we get to, I think the January mark, just after Christmas, I think that's when we can really make an honest observation of where Man United could be at the end of the season. Have they improved under Erik? Yeah, 100%. I think for Erik, it's been a good season with winning a trophy, having another final, back into the Champions League, finishing third. For Man United, that's just an okay season. And we need to make sure that we go from an okay season to a really good season, which means you are challenging for the Premier League, and you are having a very good run in the Champions League, and hopefully add another trophy to it.
Hopefully. Let's hope so. Rene, thank you very much for your time. It was a privilege to meet you. I thoroughly enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Cheers. That was Rene Mullenstein, former Manchester United coach. His new book, United, Sir Alex and Me, is out now to purchase. And the link to purchase is actually in the description of this podcast. And if you've come this far, sure, you may as well subscribe if you're feeling sound.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed our latest episode. If you listen on an Apple device, please consider leaving a review and a 5-star rating.